So I've been checking the news, Steve, on that Twitter they have now.
Oh, that's never a good idea.
And there's a story that can't be right because it's in all the tabloids, it's in the Daily Mail and in the Express and stuff, and it must be right-wing smears against Theresa May.
Why? What are you talking about?
Well, because they're saying that Theresa May's responsible for a hostile environment against immigrants. Yeah, apparently when she was Home Secretary, she set up a policy that they tried to make life hard for illegal immigrants, and it says that landlords had to essentially become immigration agents and check for status. But that's led to people who've been here for 50 years being refused cancer treatment and people being deported who've lived here for 50 years and they're going back to Jamaica where they haven't been since they were nine. And I mean, that's so crazy. That can't possibly be true.
Well, no, like that's accurate. Like the
But
hostile environment policy was Theresa May's baby when she was Home Secretary.
what? I thought these were right-wing smears to try and distract from the anti-Semitism around the Labour Party.
Why would they try and distract from that, Corey?
Well, because of the bias in the mainstream media, Steve.
Yeah, but like if they're going to be distract from anything, it's not going to be they're not going to attack their own side.
But the right-wing media are famously pro-immigration, Steve. We've seen this over many years.
Have you been taking your medicine? Because I think you need to take your medicine. I think you're getting reality mixed up with the West Wing again.
I mean, there's just one more thing that I don't really understand. So Theresa May puts in this policy. Who is it who advises her to put forward this policy?
Oh, that would be Nick Timothy.
Nick Timothy, because he was her advisor at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. And then who's the advisor who was in the room with May when she decided to go forward with this disastrous hard Brexit?
That would be Nick Timothy as well.
Okay. Maybe rather than Seamus Milne we want to fire out of a cannon, maybe it should be Nick Timothy we try and fire out of a cannon.
I could get behind that.
Okay. Political commentator's fedora, and I'm going to talk about the government screw-ups that I can recall in my about dozen years of blogging and crying about politics. And it feels like government screw-ups generally go into a few different categories. You have once in a generation massive screw-ups, generally on a foreign policy stage like Iraq and Suez. You have complete systemic failures, as happened basically at the Home Office every 18 months during New Labour government, where some Home Secretary would have to resign about, or some Home Office Minister would have to resign about some files going missing or people not being deported. You might have ministers who arrogantly thought they could redesign the whole system just like that and failed, like Michael Gove and Andrew Lansley. Or you've got little screw-ups that probably aren't the government's fault but fit into a general narrative of chaos, like losing 25 million people's child benefit data. The Windrush stuff, that's a completely different ballgame, isn't it? I can't think of anything as shameful and terrible as what's happening right now to this generation of British citizens.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference between this scandal and all the previous muck-ups that governments have done before boils down to a couple of core factors. Firstly, it's not just down to incompetence. Ultimately, the root cause of the Windrush generation being threatened with deportation, having their, you know, cancer treatment stopped, not being able to get healthcare, pensions, or any of the basic statutory rights that British citizens have, is the direct result of Theresa May's hostile environment policy. That policy was designed from its inception to make life hard for people who don't have papers. Now, you might think that sounds fine because most people will have papers in some form, and yes, a lot of people do have papers in some form, but the policy is designed to be very, very punishing. So you've got some people who have, you know, been unable to prove residence or whatever for a couple of years in the period that they've been here, and as a result of that, they've been threatened with deportation, and some people have been deported. So it's not just a case of, oops, we hit the wrong people. This is the policy actually working.
Well, and also, the Home Office destroyed the landing cards of the people who came in the original Windrush generation.
Yeah, absolutely, which is just an act of historical vandalism of the grandest scale in terms of Britain.
Well, indeed. Well, I mean, May's excuse in PMQs was that it was a Labour government that started it. Even if that decision was taken by a Labour government, that would still have been historical vandalism, as you say. But her hostile environment means that actually they were no longer historical heroes. Yeah. They were needed to prove that people should be in Britain legally, and they haven't got them anymore.
Absolutely, yeah. And here's the other thing, actually, is those landing cards wouldn't even have been viewed as representative documents that would have been accepted by the Home Office as well, because they were very specific in what was needed. Again, part of this policy is designed to make it difficult to prove you are here legally. But ultimately, the most damaging thing about this entire situation is just the fact that the government just doesn't seem to be prepared to actually do anything to try and fix it. Because ultimately, the problem is not that the policy has been implemented badly. The problem is the policy itself. It is the hostile environment policy. As long as this policy is in place, you will continue to see examples of this sort cropping up in the media.
Well, I think David Lammy, who's one of the MPs who's been really good on pushing the issue, I think he's had 7 constituents come to him in the last week or two with new stories. So this is just going to run and run, I think.
Yeah, just a quick shout out to David Lammy on this. He has been absolutely fan-freaking-tastic, being at the forefront of this, holding the government to account.
Yeah, shout out to Amelia Gentleman as well from The Guardian, who's been breaking a lot of these stories. What we wanted to try and talk about in this episode isn't so much the minutiae of the Windrush scandal, because people like Amelia Gentleman, David Lammy have done it better. What we wanted to talk about was maybe how to get out of the mess we're in a policy perspective. I think an issue that will be forever debated by historians is, does Theresa May believe the insane things that she, or the insane policies that she carries out, or is she doing them because it's what they think the British public want? And I think there's no better area in which governments are trying to pander to the worst desires of the British people,
quote unquote,
than over immigration. And so what we'd like to do over the next few minutes in this episode is talk about actually, what does polling evidence suggest that British attitudes are to immigration? And then some policies that we could maybe use to try and get us through the morass. Because, of course, there is going to be an immigration bill out this year.
At some point.
Isn't there, Amber Rudd? Isn't there? It's not like you've got anything else to... No, never mind. As we pointed out in the introduction, newspapers like the Daily Mail, the Express, the Sun, whose attitude to immigration, I'm going to put it ambivalent to mildly hostile.
I would go a bit further than that, but continue.
They've been running on the Windrush stuff quite a lot, and I think, or quite heavily. And I think you can probably see that, I suppose the reason for that is that people like the Windrush generation are not seen as immigrants, they're seen as British citizens. I mean,
because they are.
Yeah, that there's a very good reason for that. If you look at the National Social Surveys and what they say about immigration, the kind of immigrants that people want in Britain, so 84%, of those in 2014. This is in 2014, and I think there might even be evidence that attitudes to immigration is even probably softened since the Brexit vote, and it might even be more pro-immigrationist. But 84% of those who were surveyed thought that immigrants should be committed to the British way of life. 87% thought they should be able to speak English. 81% thought they should have skills that Britain needs. 74% said they had good educational qualifications. Only 7% thought that those people should be white. You can tell that actually that generation of Windrush immigrants who were invited here to work and have settled, that there is no way that they should be targeted by any immigration policy.
Yeah, when it comes to actual public opinion, using the best evidence we have, the Windrush generation tick every criteria that you could have for people that the public are happy to be here.
British public are not immoral bastards, shocker. Then we're going to take a more of our stats from British Futures, which is the think tank that Sundar Katwala runs. And he's done some really, really good stuff, going around the country, doing lots of conversations about immigration, essentially trying to come up with a sort of a negotiated degree compromise with, trying to balance the different views of Tory voters, Labour voters, Remain voters, Leave voters, whatever. Although maybe generally, if you talk about immigrants in general, the British public say in surveys they want immigration reduced. Actually, if then you're asked, okay, which particular kind of immigrants do you want to see numbers reduced? Turns out most people don't really want to see numbers reduced. So if you talk about, for instance, high skill workers, students, even seasonal workers, most people, we're looking between about 60, 70, 80% in terms of being polled by British Future, either want to see the same proportion of those people coming, or indeed an increase in those numbers. Not many people want to see skilled immigrants, international students, numbers go down.
Yeah, and again, this is one of those areas where effectively what we're seeing is the clash of the narrative around immigration versus the actual reality of it. Essentially, the narrative around immigration is that there are good immigrants and there are bad immigrants. There are good immigrants who are doctors, who are nurses, who are teachers, who are, you know, bringing something, working hard, coming over here to make a better life for themselves, and nobody's got any problem with them. But then there are bad immigrants. There are people who are here illegally. There are people here who are here to play the system and game it. And so everything gets divided up into that. But the vast, vast, vast majority of people who come to Britain are good immigrants, if you're going to use that lexicon, because they're here to work. You don't upend your entire life to move to another country just because you think you might get a bit of money on the dole.
I mean, should we use that lexicon, though? Because, I mean, the problem with attitude surveys like this, and even, I mean, people might argue problems of podcasts like this trying to work out what British attitudes to immigration are, is you do end up talking about good immigrants and bad immigrants. I mean, and that's still stigmatising immigration, isn't it? So is there a way of trying to move away from that, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe there is, but I don't think it's something that's got a very easy answer. Ultimately, it involves, you know, a massive shift in the, you know, the policy framework, and also the framework at which we have the debate on immigration. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think you could suddenly turn around and make a full throat defence of the concept of immigration, in the way that you would have to do if you were to abandon that good versus bad immigrant narrative.
I mean, there's lots of things that I find daft about Theresa May, well, the Conservatives' positioning and Theresa May's positioning in particular over this. One in particular is about international students, where there's massive majorities of Leave and Remain voters want to keep international students coming here. Universities need international students
to function.
Keep on coming here. Indeed, to pay their bills. And yet, this insistence on keeping international students by Theresa May in the immigration figures, it's just absolutely daft and makes no sense.
Yeah, it's, there are very few things you can say about Theresa May that she's a genuine believer of, but being anti-immigration is one of them. The reality is that by all accounts from both George Osborne and various Liberal Democrat members of the government during the coalition, some anecdotal evidence from various special advisers who had to deal with Theresa May, is that, you know, a lot of the things that she wanted to do as Home Secretary were even more stringent than what she was actually allowed to do and got away with. Ultimately, there were some situations where, you know, some of the more the hostile environment policy and things were allowed through the Quad by the coalition in exchange for specific, you know, Lib Dem gains
in
policy.
The plastic bag tax.
I was a Lib Dem during the coalition. I was more pro-coalition than an awful lot of people in the country were. But even I look at that and go, why would you make that exchange? That doesn't make much sense.
I think Nick Clegg was so desperate to have a hostile environment for plastic bags, he forgot about the consequences of a hostile environment for people.
It may very well be the case.
I mean, the other thing, as well as the international students issue, are seasonal workers as well. And I believe we've talked on this podcast about the problems of the fact that there are farms that now can't get seasonal workers from the EU to come and do the stuff they need to do, either in hotels or cherry pickers, whatever. Actually, not cherry picking, because that's the UK's Brexit position. Other forms of fruit they'll be picking.
Strawberries.
Indeed. But 2/3 of the British public, including more than half of Leave voters, still think that the immigration policy should be flexible enough to take into account of seasonal workers.
And again, like, if you want a kind of a definition of an unskilled immigrant coming over here to work, which is one of those things where everybody goes, actually, we don't want unskilled labour migrating here. Seasonal workers, fruit pickers, those sorts of things, they are classic examples of that. And yet, again, when you go down to that specific of here is the job they're doing, everybody goes, oh, actually, no, that's really helpful. That's a really good thing for them to do. Yeah, we're fine with that.
I still find it amazing that the public attitude in immigration is still more nuanced than the government's own policy. Let's challenge that assumption, though, and talk about where there's little public support. So, where there isn't a lot of public sympathy in terms of a clear majority of a support tend to be on areas like asylum seekers, or tend to be in areas like accepting refugees, or on, say, bringing existing immigrants over here, bringing over extended family workers. Mm-hmm. Extended family members.
I think you'll find that's the problem. They're bringing over the extended family workers and not, taking our jobs.
Not the au pairs. And also, there is a big concern over illegal immigration.
Yeah.
Now, Yvette Cooper, who was Shadow Home Secretary, I think, at that time, and Ed Miliband, who was a Labour leader in name anyway, they supported the immigration bills and the hostile environment stuff coming through. Jeremy Corbyn, turns out, he didn't vote with Labour. He opposed that policy, which, again, is... well, good for him, because he was right. But the reason, I think, when you look at the rhetoric and quotes around what Cooper said at the time, a lot of it is because Labour needed to look tough on immigration.
Hence the mugs.
We're tough on illegal immigration in particular. Because there's not much public support for accepting asylum seekers, refugees, and this concern with illegal immigration in particular, that's where a lot of the problem, the hostile environment stuff, has come from. And so I think any policy that wants to take into account of the will of the British people needs to try and address that. And if we're going to talk about making the positive case for immigration, actually, you don't need to make the positive case in a lot of cases for the Womworth generation or for doctors coming over here, because actually people accept this should be, that's fine. Actually, where you need to make that case, and certainly you can make it over Syrian refugees, is actually, rather than maybe bombing Syria, we could try and let in more Syrian refugees.
I think it's quite interesting that, in effect, the negative kind of aspects of immigration that the public holds are can be summed up basically as illegal immigration, which, yeah, you can see why they've cheated their system, they've gotten in when they shouldn't have, yada, yada, yada. You can see why people would object to that. But then on the other side, you've got refugees. These are people who have lost everything, and yet we're very hostile to them still. And I wonder if an awful lot of that comes not from necessarily kind of like just an immigration kind of viewpoint, but the fact that it's very easy to kind of make cases for kind of similar in the way that Donald Trump has done in America, where you go, well, we don't know who these people are. They could be lying. They could be refugees, yes, but some of them could be bad eggs, and they could be suicide bombers. They could be terrorists. They could be this, that, and the other. So I wonder if, like, the Islamophobia that's inherent in a lot of the media has led to that negative kind of view of refugees and asylum seekers, which then bleeds over into the immigration debate itself, as we end up thinking of, especially due to where an awful lot of refugees come from these days, as being, you know, Arabs from the Middle East, a lot of which are still young men.
But also, who's more likely to be able to move as a refugee, to be a young man or an old woman?
Yeah, exactly. So because of that, that situation, people have become more distrustful of refugees, wrongly, I would add, in my opinion, but they have. And then that's bled over into the wider immigration debate as people have kind of, at least in government, have started to view that debate as being about immigration rather than about that section of immigration.
And I think in terms of the tabloid attacks and the negativity over immigration, it's definitely, I think, on asylum seekers and refugees where you see that, like the Daily Mail. Well, the right-wing press will talk about failed asylum seekers when there's no such thing as a failed asylum seeker. Also is reminiscent, I think, of the Breaking Point poster Nigel Farage's Brexit campaign used in the referendum, because if you look at that poster, what that looks more like to me isn't immigrants coming over here to work. That looks to me more like a line of refugees or asylum seekers.
Which is what it is.
Waiting to progress.
Exactly what it was. Indeed. They were, I believe, like refugees from Sarajevo or something daft like that during the 90s. There's a lot of kind of playing around with that sort of rhetoric and that kind of imagery, which has blurred the lines quite effectively from the anti-immigration kind of standpoint. And that's really, I think, the thing that the pro-immigration side have failed to counter.
They're the problems. Let's quickly talk about a few solutions, just quickly. British Future got the... they have a statement on immigration, which 70% or 71% of people surveyed agreed with this, including 79% of Conservative voters and 73% of those who voted Leave agreed with this statement, which is, immigration brings pressures as well as gains, and our decision to leave the EU gives us a chance to change the system. What we need now is a sensible policy to manage immigration so we control who comes here, but still keep the immigration that's good for our economy and society and maintains our tradition of offering sanctuary to refugees who need our protection. Which I think probably just about anyone can sign up to, unless you're to either we don't want to let anyone in North Korea style, or we want completely open borders, both of which I would argue
are extremist positions.
Probably also politically suicidal. What policies would that actually mean? Well, essentially, what British Futures is proposing is that we drop the headline cap on immigration, essentially because it's a stupid idea. Most people don't think it's going to be achieved anyway, and it's meaningless to everyone. It's meaningless to everyone apart from Theresa May.
Yep.
So we drop that. What we have instead is, in terms of skilled immigration, that is still free movement as it stands. In terms of unskilled immigration, this is where you see the workers come in, the proposal is for a cap and a kind of quota system by industry, which seems relatively sensible if you're going to do it like that, I would say.
You run into the risk that maybe the quotas don't necessarily keep up with actual demand, but if you're not going to just let people in, then that's always a risk.
And I suppose in terms of getting access to single market and customs union, or certainly single market access post-Brexit, is that free movement enough to satisfy the EU?
Probably not. Freedom of movement is freedom of movement. You can't pick and choose it. It is what it is. It's one of the founding principles of the EU now. You're not going to be able to get away by slicing and dicing it.
Yes. Oh well, never mind. Final policy that we can talk about, and it is one we've talked a little bit about on the podcast mainly because it's quite a good policy, but it's the idea of a migration impact fund, where higher immigration has led to higher impacts on service. There is a specific fund designated to that area where people can that can be used to alleviate pressure on those services. And indeed, how that's, I don't think it's British Future that suggests this. I think it's a different report, which I can't find now, obviously. But how they suggest it should work is that essentially the local MP, the local council, local councillors consult with local residents and a bit more deliberative democracy and say, okay, we've got this money, where do you want it to be spent? Essentially, it has to be very, very visible that this is a migration impact fund. It's because of the benefits of immigration, and it's going to these specific services.
Yeah, I mean, as far as actual kind of meaningful policies go on this sort of stuff, I think that's probably the most likely to kind of get support across the political spectrum. But again, going back to what I was talking about earlier, does that solve, quote unquote, the problem of immigration as viewed by the British public? No, it mitigates the effects. which ultimately, actually, that's what a lot of the problem comes down to, not necessarily even the effects, but the perceived effects. Ultimately, if the British government do want that number of immigrants lower, you need to find a way to make that lower, if you actually want to deliver on what the British public wants. But the British public wants to, a lower figure, but for none of the current people who are over here to actually to leave or stop coming over if they're the right sort. Basically, the only way you can hit that immigration number is if more Brits start emigrating.
Oh, can I name a few?
Yes, you can.
Okay, Nick Timothy.
Yeah.
Probably Chris Williamson.
Yeah.
I would say.
Seamus Milne.
Obviously.
Obviously to Russia.
Gavin Williamson.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Okay. Right, that's four.
That's four, yeah. Only another 100,000 to go year.
If you have any suggestions of who we should send, the best and the brightest one might say, send them to us on our website, notenoughchampagne.com, on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne, or to me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @paperbackrioter.
Mine is @centreradical.
@nochampagnepod is our Twitter handle. James Crown designed our logo, and Dave Depper designed our... is responsible for our theme tune, Fucking Good Times. Happy plotting, everyone.